Switching to Geico is a good idea, especially when you consider everything.
First off, Geico makes it easy to switch. They have licensed agents available 24/7 online or over the phone.
But if it's so easy, you might start thinking everything is easy, even big wave surfing. And it's not. It's actually quite difficult.
Well, if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds on car insurance. And you could keep saving by bundling your motorcycle, boat, and RV, plus your home or renter's insurance.
But saving money might lead you to make some questionable purchases, like a 20-foot feather boa. And do you know how hard it is to clean a 20-foot feather boa?
Well, they do have an industry-leading mobile app you can use to pay your bill, file and manage a claim, or add a new driver.
But when life gets a little easier, it makes you too confident. And you start calling everyone Ace. And you're better than that.
Well, Geico has a 97% customer satisfaction rating and has been saving people money for 85 years. It's hard to beat that.
But you're right.
Switch to Geico. It's obviously a good idea.
Must be Thursday. Welcome to Learning Unwrapped, the talk show about your most important life skill, learning, brought to you by International Broadcast Media Television. I'm Dr. Nancy Sula, president of IDE Corp. In my spare time, I work as an educational consultant when I'm not working on the show. I love doing this show, and I would like to thank my live audience for being here, joining me. As always, please put your comments, your questions, because if we can create an environment where our live audience is talking to our live guests, that's what it's all about. And we've got some great guests with us tonight to talk about reinventing high school. But first, a little personal news. I just finished my second COVID vaccine. So I've been a little bit, sluggish. I think that's the best thing to say. You know, people have had different reactions to the second vaccine. For me, it was very tired. I spent the day after in bed, and now this is my second day, and I was up and about today. So I'm really excited about that I'm vaccinated. And I hope that everybody out there listening goes ahead and does it. It's not painful at all. I was very surprised, actually, that when they stuck me with the needle, because the gentleman at the pharmacy, I went to a local pharmacy, and he took the needle and he's like going like this, like it was a dart. And then he gets like whack. And I didn't feel a thing. And I started laughing. I said to him, I thought you were like shooting me with a dart. And he says, you know, you got to get it in right. So I encourage you to all go and do that. Also, last month, at the end of the month, we kicked off Women's History Month with a show called Breaking Glass. And at the time, we were highlighting Deb Haaland, the new Secretary of the Interior. At the time, she was a congresswoman from New Mexico. And she could not be on the show, but she was gracious enough to film an intro to the show. And I'm very excited to say that Deb, who's a member of New Mexico's Laguna Pueblo, has just been confirmed 2 days ago as the first Native American cabinet secretary in U.S. history. So we're going to replay her message to all of us because it's a message I could listen to over and over again, and I think you'll agree.
Hello, everyone. I'm Deb Haaland, a proud member of the Pueblo of Laguna and representative for New Mexico's 1st Congressional District. I'm grateful for the opportunity to join you on the Learning Unwrapped talk show today. Thank you for taking the time to raise awareness and celebrate women in history. Women are fierce. When we have a seat at the table, policies and ideas are more dynamic and solutions are capable of supporting all our communities. Representation matters. When I first decided to run for Congress, there were people telling me that I couldn't do it. I couldn't raise the money. It's never been done before. But I wouldn't take no for an answer. I worked hard, ran a campaign I'm proud of, and now have a seat at the table to stand up for those who have never had a voice, to highlight issues that are important to our communities. I am accompanied by many other strong, powerful, and successful women who are breaking glass ceilings each and every day. During Women's History Month, we honor, respect, and celebrate the women who blazed trails before us. We stand on their shoulders as we forge new paths. You all are not just the leaders of tomorrow, you're the leaders of today, and I'm here to support and empower you. I'll leave the ladder down so you can achieve your dreams, and I will lend my shoulders for you to stand on whenever you need them. Thank you again for having me, and be fierce.
So it's never been done, but there she is. Thank you so much, Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland. Love that. All right, so let's start talking about reinventing high school. First, I'm going to bring in my co-host, which is a gentleman that I work with at IDE Corp. He is a leadership consultant with us. He also consults with a variety of schools and a number of high schools. Please welcome Dave Raffo.
Good evening, Nance. How are you?
Very well, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing great. I never thought in a million years I would hear Nancy Sula be equated to sluggish. That is something that I just never anticipated would come out of your mouth before, Nance.
I know. It's not me, is it? It's you know, I'm usually the Energizer Bunny, but I've been like a little bit of brain fog.
Excellent. I'm very excited to, you know, have this extremely important conversation on reinventing high schools this evening.
Definitely. And just if you want to share some news with everybody, don't you have some new news you learned recently?
We did. Yeah. So my wife, who might be viewing, Carly Raffo, and I are expecting our new addition, Charlotte Capri Raffo, on July 20th of 2021.
Fantastic. Yeah. A little daddy's little girl is coming.
Yes. Yeah. So we're very excited. We just got that news last week. And, you know, we can't wait to welcome our little gem in this world.
That's awesome. That's awesome. See, apparently one of your colleagues here had no idea.
Yeah, well, we're dropping knowledge on the audience right now.
You know, Dave, in the middle of a meeting, Dave will say something like, and when our new baby comes, and I'll be like, what? So this is the way Dave rolls out news. So now that's it. Yeah. It's on international television.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's start talking about some high schools. Our first guest that we're going to bring in is Chris Hanks. He is the principal of Public Museum High School of the Grand Rapids Public Schools in Michigan. What's interesting is the school is located downtown in the original public museum, and they prioritize learning as a community of learners, with the downtown serving as an extension of the classroom. They were one of 10 schools internationally to receive the XQ Super School grant. He is also formerly an associate professor at the Grand Valley State University, which is a founding partner of the museum school. He also founded and is the board president of the Grand Rapids Early Discovery Program, which is a nonprofit early childhood education program serving downtown Grand Rapids. He is married with 4 children, Dave, 4.
I got some time to catch up there.
I think 2 dogs and way too many books and vinyl records. Please welcome Dr. Christopher Hanks.
Hello, nice to be here.
Welcome, Dr. Hanks. If you could start us off by telling us one thing that you learned this week.
Okay. My head is still hurting from this. I was helping out in a math class earlier today and a little bit about the relationship of arc sine and sine, arc cosine, and arc tangent and tangent, and how those are something like inverses of each other. I don't know if I could say much more, though.
How'd you do? Did you stay around for the quiz?
I'm still here.
He's still standing.
Did you stay around for the quiz?
I did not, no.
Probably smart that way. Well, Chris, you are soon to be joined by an assistant principal of a high school in California. So we're going from Michigan to California. We have John Middleton, who is the assistant principal at Ace Charter High School in Camarillo, California. ACE stands for Architecture, Construction, and Engineering. In the recent past, ACE has gone from being one of the lowest performing schools in the county to one of the highest performing. While at ACE, John has helped to authorize the school's International Baccalaureate Career-Related Studies Program. It is the first in the nation with a career-related studies program in construction. He is the 2019 Toastmasters Community Service Award winner in Ventura County. So I think that means he'll be a good talker. When he's not at ACE, you will find him exploring California on his bicycle. Please welcome John Middleton.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, John.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm well, John, thank you.
The bar is raised because you're a Toastmaster.
It is.
Yes.
So, John, if you could just tell us one thing that you learned this week.
So I learned just yesterday that things do come to an end. After a year, our students were back on campus for the first time.
Yeah. So
yesterday was an emotional day, and things do come to an end.
Wow. I bet they're happy to be back. Because for high school kids, their social life is everything.
Yes.
As you will hear, we in our outro video, we interviewed several students as to, you know, what they would like to see different in high school. And I can't tell you the number of them who were looking for free time to be with their friends. So I think we need to reinvent high school so that they feel like they're having free time with their friends all day long. We'll get to that. Okay, next up, we are now going to bring in a consultant. Now, Dr. Omega Wilson actually was formerly the director of high school education, but she is now the lead educational consultant and leadership consultant for Innovative Consulting Strategies, LLC. She consults with high schools on increasing on-time graduation rates, improving attendance, elevating standardized test scores, while boosting morale for staff and students. She is also an adjunct professor at Virginia Commonwealth University, University of Richmond, and Virginia Union University. So obviously, in her spare time, her community services efforts have been recognized by local news outlets, including CBS, NBC, the Richmond Times-Dispatch. She has published 3 books, Spiritual Nutrition, From Alpha to Omega, I love that, Tips for Aspiring Administrators, and Lead by Example, a 90-day journal for all leaders. Please welcome Dr. Omega Wilson.
Well, hello, hello. Thank you. I appreciate that warm welcome, Nancy.
Thank you. Now you can say, I'll thank my mother. I'd like to thank my father.
Exactly. You got it.
All right. Well, Dr. Wilson, thanks for joining us. Can you start us off by telling us one thing that you learned this week?
Yeah, thank you so much. One thing I learned this week is one of the school divisions that I'm working with, the high school students returned this week, and they had a very, very smooth first day back. No crying, no tears, no mishaps, no one missed the bus, none of that. So it was an amazing first day back for this particular high school.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
And that's true because I hadn't thought about it, that the students who are incoming ninth graders and even the 10th graders, like the ninth graders, obviously it's their first time coming to high school, but even right. the 10th graders just started, right?
Yes.
So
you're right.
It's mm-hmm. it's unknown territory. So let's get, I'd love for the audience to get to hear a little bit about what you are all doing in your various places. John, talk to us a little bit about ACE Charter High School. And I know you guys have some plans for some groundbreaking. So tell us a little bit about that.
We do. So ACE Charter High School stands, as the name implies, for Architecture, Construction, Engineering. We also have a pathway in computer programming. So what makes ACE unique is it is a school built around 4 career pathways. So students come to ACE because they're intrinsically interested in learning a career-ready skill. A major, if you will, like when we were in college, we were history majors or whatnot. Our students get a sampling their freshman, sophomore year of the 4, and then their junior, senior year, they have a specialty in one of those 4 pathways. And then when they leave us, it's either college and or career right out of high school because of the program that we offer. And from that, we're looking to build a new school site. And a bigger school that will allow us to incorporate more pathways for our students. Other really unique thing about it is we're trying to have the kids build it for us. So design the school, take part in the building of the school, and then the launching of the school.
Oh, that's very cool. I mean, after all, you need architects, engineers, and people in construction, right, to open a school? That's pretty cool.
You do.
Will the name be the same, ACE Charter?
You know, I don't want to promise anything, but we would really love to call it ACE Polytechnic High School.
All right. Taking it to a new level with fancy words. Yeah. Sounds good. All right. So, Chris, tell us a little bit about Public Museum High School. Uh-oh, lost Chris. He'll be back. So, Omega, why don't you tell us a little bit? Now, I know you're not currently affiliated with just one high school, so why don't you tell us a little bit about the high schools that you're working with in terms of innovation? What are some of the innovations that you're pursuing?
With the high schools that I'm working with throughout the country, we are, at this particular moment, trying to stay afloat during the pandemic. But one thing that we're doing is beginning to take a strong look at incorporating more dual enrollment courses in the schools so that, and more technology, to be honest with you. The pandemic has brought out a lot of amazing things, to be honest. And we want to know, you know, can students finish high school in 2 or 3 years by doing what they've done within the last 365 days? Mm. Why is it that they have to stay in school for 4 years? Okay, so we have different platforms that you can use for technology for schools. I don't know if you want me to name those platforms or not, which students have been using for the last 365 plus.
Up to you.
Well, when they finish English 9, why can't they go ahead and advance to English 10, English 11, English 12? Some students very well may finish school in 2 years. And the way to reinvent all of this, I've been saying this for years, why is it that students are going to school for 4 years like we did? Everybody doesn't have to stay in school for 4 years. And it doesn't mean they have to go to college or they have to go to the armed forces, but they very well may want to go to the workforce or become entrepreneurs. Mm. So we're looking at, I don't want to say expediting education, but looking at different ways to meet the needs of students on different levels. That makes sense?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I love it too, because we've seen some students who have been able to finish an English 9 class in 3 months or a month, 7 weeks.
Own the road with T-Mobile, the leader in 5G. Whether you're cruising through Nashville on I-40, heading down I-90 to Boston, or touring Santa Cruz on the 5, you'll be covered by the largest 5G network. T-Mobile covers the most interstate highway miles in America with 5G.
See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com. Most reliable according to independent third-party Ookla from crowdsourced user experience data from January to July 2021. Fastest according to OpenSignal awards based on average speeds in USA 5G user experience report July 2021.
So when they finish that class, like I said, go ahead and put them in English 10. See how well they do. If they have to take a state test, so be it. But then let them continue to work at their own pace. And we've truly seen that during the pandemic that everybody is, you know, working at a different pace. And this thing has really helped a lot of people. I don't know if you want me to go into that right now, but it has helped a lot of students.
And why not be able to pursue something you love? I remember when I was teaching, middle school and high school computer science back in the 80s. And I actually was a computer programmer in industry. I was a teacher first, but then I went into industry. So when I came back, I was like the perfect person to kick off technology in schools. Mm-hmm. And I was teaching my sixth graders, and there were a couple of boys who were just really go-getters. And so I just kept giving them more and more, you know, products that I bought. And at times I would even say to them, like, I have no idea what this does, but why don't you guys see what you can do? Well, by the time they got up to eighth grade, I had already in seventh grade, I taught them Pascal programming. In eighth grade, I had taught them C language programming on an Apple IIe machine. It was hysterical. Mm-hmm. Then they came up to high school with me. Well, the opening course in high school was Pascal, but I had them do an independent study and I took them to a higher level of C. And we got to the point where they could accelerate wherever they wanted. And they were getting summer jobs. They were getting paid an exorbitant amount of money as C language programmers when they were juniors in high school, and their companies that they were working for were begging them to not go to college. They just wanted to get jobs right out of high school. And that's when, like, time out, like, not going to let you do that. So,
yeah. I mean, it's the pandemic has truly been a situation amongst its own self. I mean, you know, it's worked in a negative way, but if you really look at it for a lot of educators, for a lot of students, it has been 100% helpful. I can't even begin to tell you how many students have benefited from the one-to-one or from being on the computer because they don't have the distractions that they have in the classroom. They don't have the distractions that they have in the school, period. So I've seen and heard of so many, talked to parents too, and seen so many students who have improved their academic performance. So again, I mean, it's a great time for us to really, really, as educators, become innovative and think outside the box and do something different.
Yeah.
There's no way in the world we could ever go back to what we were doing 365 plus days ago. It's no way we can do that. No way.
And you've used one of my hashtags, which is hashtag do something different. And
do
I keep saying that throughout the pandemic. And I say that I'm releasing my sixth book. It's coming out mid-April on reinventing the classroom experience, learning anywhere, anytime. And it's all about, this is time for us to do something different. So let me ask you all, if you thought about, let's get it down to three goals of high school. What would you say they should be? If you were to think of three goals of high school, what should we, because if we're going to reinvent high school, we need to get down to, well, what's the purpose? So the purpose of high school is this, this, and this. So what do we think?
I know I just talked, but I can jump in if you guys want me to.
Go ahead.
I think that I know that every single student needs to have, work with me, you all, an IEP, an individualized education plan. When the students hit ninth grade, or actually should have started it before ninth grade, but everybody needs to have a prescribed plan for them so they will know what direction they want to go in. They need to know coming in the ninth grade whether they want to go to college when they finish or whether they want to go to a trade school. I'm a firm believer in the four E's, being enrolled, enlisted, employed, or an entrepreneur. I think that we have to set a prescribed program for every single student to help them get to where they want to be by doing what they want to do.
So it sounds like you would say that a big part of high school is that it should be personalized at this point.
Yes, ma'am. It has to be. This is one of the reasons, Nancy, why so many students drop out of school.
Right.
It's not number one reason, of course, is because they don't think that anybody cares about them. But the number two reason is probably because they're bored.
Yeah.
So we're teaching them in this bubble right here. The kids are, they're way out there. Their minds are a little more broader sometimes on a lot of things than ours. So why are we making them stay right here? It's almost like we're penalizing or punishing them. Put them on a plan and then they can see, they can go to college, of course, but by the time they get to college, they will know for sure, this is what I really want to study. Or if they become an entrepreneur, as soon as they graduate, they'll say, yeah, I really want to do this. But I think we have to do a better job of implementing some type of a firm plan for the students.
I would echo that, Nancy. I our school mission statement says, in part, we want to help students, have the capacity to pursue their best selves. And I think that's what Dr. Wilson is talking about in personalizing education, providing a variety of experiences. I don't know that, in ninth grade, I had no idea where I wanted to end up. But it would have been great in high school to have a variety of learning experiences. I also think a purpose of high school is to help students impact their communities and become empowered citizen leaders in their community. So I would add that to the list as well.
All right. John, what do you want to add?
I think you picked your guests so that everybody would agree with each other tonight. The second thing I was going to say is individualized learning. The first thing that I would say is choice. So give kids a choice as to the curriculum. Give the kids a choice into what it is that they are studying because of what they want to do. Don't create a prepackaged curriculum for every kid that has the same set of courses. Individualize what it is the kid wants to do and give them a choice. And then the last thing that I would add is throw out your standards and embrace a thematic approach to learning.
Yes, sir.
Right? Get rid of the silos of history. Get rid of the silo of English. Build out essential questions and have the kids explore a set of learnings around themes.
Well, John, maybe it's not throw out the standards. because the standards themselves, as you read them, can be good. The problem is we teach the standards like they're a list. You know, I've been talking a lot about learning loss. How are we going to get past learning loss? And if you look at standards, there are like four standards in a row. And it's like building, 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 building. And then the last standard is like, you know, the student will be able to write a novel or whatever it is. Yeah. It's like, that's what I call the power standard. Mm-hmm. And if we looked at the bigger picture, I mean, my work for decades now, decades, real decades, has been around designing schools around problem-based learning. And I like to call them the five P's of PBL. I think we have an image for that. And the whole idea is start by giving kids a real world authentic problem to solve or an authentic challenge they want to pursue. And it can be along any of these lines and then, you know, run with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about this. What if you asked every kid in your high school one essential question at the start of the year? What does it mean to be a member of a community? And then every subject runs with that overarching question throughout everything, whether you're reading The Great Gatsby or you're studying foreign policy in the Middle
Love
East.
That. Love
what
that.
Does it mean to be a member of the community?
Mm-hmm. Love mm-hmm. that.
I just want to add, I think thematic integrated curriculum and teaching and learning is exactly the right way to bring relevance and meaning to students' experiences. And I'd love to tell you more about how our school tries to do that. But I do want to also say, when it comes to personalized learning, an idea that I believe in deeply, that we need to always pursue that through the lens of equity in our schools. We need to make sure that personalizing a student's pathway is not presuming for them the direction that we think they may want to go or may be capable of going. And I think that's just always an important reminder to add when we talk about personalizing pathways, we're not opening up opportunities to students, not tracking students in a particular route. Because right. one other purpose of education, public education in America, you know, since its origins has always been to be an equalizer and create access to opportunity for all students.
I love that. And I think that's, we need to go from that assets-based look as mm-hmm. opposed to a deficits-based look. You know, I was even, I've been talking with Shanae Buford, who is our director of educational equity. And I said, I'm concerned that schools are coming to us because they're being cited by states for having, their special ed population is mm-hmm. skewed toward Black and brown students and mm-hmm. children of color end up in the special ed classes, et cetera. And I said, my only concern about taking that approach is that I could see schools saying, wait, do we really want to refer that student? Because, you know, like then that's going to skew our numbers. And before you know it, students who actually need services aren't yeah. getting them. So one of the things she said is, why don't we look at what percentage of your students by race are in AP classes? What percentage of your students by mm-hmm. race are in honors classes? What mm-hmm. percentage are engaged in STEM programs? What mm-hmm. are engaged in extracurricular activities? So let's look at how do we open up and create those opportunities for everyone?
Everyone.
So get rid of tracking, which oftentimes ends up being an equity problem.
Mm-hmm. Every 100%. 100%.
Studio audience. Oh, we got a question up here, Dave.
Yeah. So Shane is chiming in with, how do we balance the needs of the individual with the needs of society when it comes to personalized learning for students?
You stumped us.
I don't know if I have an answer to that, but I love that question. You know, at our school, we kind of building off some of the conversation about standards and authentic learning, we feel that, you know, Lancey, like you said, if you look at standards carefully, usually they are talking about cognitive skills. They're talking about high-level thinking skills when we interpret them as lists of facts that we go wrong. And so we augment standards with a set of competencies that our school is geared around. And those competencies broaden the understanding of what it means to learn and what those skills might be. So, you know, reading critically, quantitative reasoning, those are in there as they should be, as they would be in any school. But so are, you know, developing self-knowledge and building community. Those are equally important competencies. And I think that, I mean, that's a very philosophical question, but and which I love because philosophy is my background. But I think that when we help students find their passions personally and through engagement with others in community, that we don't have to, you know, dictate for them or decide for them how they can contribute. They see those connections.
Mm-hmm. And I think don't shoot at me, you all. I think we have to do a better job of, I don't know who said it a few minutes ago, but allowing the children to have more voice in their career, mm-hmm. in their life after high school. I mean, again, we're kind of preparing them, and we have school counselors. This is not a knock on school counselors at all, because at this particular point in time, I mean, the majority of them are dealing with mental health issues, and they were doing that before, whether it's suicide or whatever it may be. But I think once we get to the place, or if we could collectively get to the place where school counselors can really be school counselors and sit down and counsel students on what they need to do and talk to them about what is it that you want to do with your career when you get out of here, and the importance of them, I really think community service should be something mandatory for students. I also think that we should be offering courses, especially now for kids, and I don't know how many schools do this, but it needs to be mandatory for soft skills. All of these things really prepare the students for the real world. And no disrespect to any school, it's not a knock on education. I'm an educator myself, obviously, but I think that we have to do a better job of preparing these students, you know, and not just this cookie cutter model of what is supposed to be done. And these are the recommended courses that you have to take. And we'll get on standardized testing when Nancy says, I saw the question to come through, but I mean, our focus has to shift in order for us to really see a shift in the students, or to better prepare them, if that makes sense.
I spoke recently at the Smart Education Online Summit in Dubai. Of course, I didn't have to go to Dubai because it was online. Wow. But I spoke on academic resilience. And the whole idea, it comes back to those soft skills you're talking about. The idea is, if we build in students, I mean, think about it. Everything, and I've been saying this for years, everything you need to learn is on the internet. Like, mm-hmm. so if a student needs to learn any of those standards, quite honestly, most of those can be found on the internet. What they need teachers for and schools for is to really learn some of the higher level skills, like analysis and synthesizing, putting these pieces together, developing something new, design process skills. Like, that's what students need schools for, not to teach them, sorry, Chris, but arc and co-arc. What were you saying? Arc, tangent, co-tangent.
Like, I
can watch that video, right? I can watch that video on the internet. But do I know, like, what am I going to do with it? How can I apply it? Like, how can we play with that in terms of something else? Like, you know, so we don't want to, and I'm not taking down your math teachers, but like, that is where schools tend to focus, where all of that is on the internet. But resilience, you know, when people are talking about learning loss, my response to that is, you aren't building resilient learners. Because if you were building resilient learners, like, we design learner-active technology-infused classrooms, and for our teachers who are running those classrooms with fidelity, those kids just went home and kept learning. And there aren't learning losses, and it's a different way, it's a different place, but the kids need to be resilient. And those are some of those soft skills that you're talking about.
Right.
And that, I think, is huge. Like, I think when I think of high school, yes, I want academics, and I agree with all of you that let's allow the students to create the path for those academics.
We did it again. Verizon was just named America's most reliable network by Root Metrics for the 16th time in a row, proving once again that nobody builds networks like Verizon builds networks. That's why we're building 5G right. That's why there's only one best network, Verizon. Best and most reliable based on Root Metrics reports from second half 2013 to first half 2021 of three operators on all network types combined, not specific to 5G networks. We did it again. Verizon was just named America's most reliable network by RootMetrics for the 16th time in a row, proving once again that nobody builds networks like Verizon builds networks. That's why we're building 5G right. That's why there's only one best network, Verizon. Best and most reliable based on RootMetrics reports from second half 2013 to first half 2021 of three operators on all network types combined, not specific to 5G networks.
Whoops. And I just knocked my mic off. So I want the students to decide the direction, and I want kids to build those academic resilient skills. Mm-hmm. And then I want them to build the social and emotional learning skills to be a community member and be out there.
Yeah. And what's what's the definition of the needs of a society? The kids that we have in our classrooms right now are going to be in charge in 50 years mm-hmm. after we're mm-hmm. gone. And that's the society for them at that time. So the idea that we should create a curriculum and prepackage it for them and bind them up and say that your future, when you're in charge of the society, doesn't matter.
Right.
So much of what I do every day is career-focused education. So I have students in pathways that are linked to things like robotics. Well, robotics of today and the robotic technologies of 50 years are going to be completely different. So instead of designing a program around just what the kids need now to be successful in a career in robotics or computer programming, they need to also understand and learn those skills, those soft skills, that is going to keep them gainfully employed 50 years from now when some new technology comes in to displace what it is or change what it is that they're doing right now. Mm-hmm. We're preparing kids for jobs that haven't been invented yet.
Right, right. And I love that,
absolutely,
John.
True.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Chris.
I was actually going to refer to something you said earlier, Dr. Wilson, about connecting students to, you know, real applications outside of school. Because as you were saying that, I think a question came through the chat from Christina, I think, and asking what opportunities are there to help students pursue their passions outside of schools. And I think that, we look at dual enrollment with our higher education partners. We look at internships. Our school, you know, our oldest grade level is 11th grade right now, because we've just been adding a grade level every year, and that's where we're at. So we're building these programs as we're going. And I'm sure at John's school, with their career focus, they're doing a lot of those partnerships as well with local industry. And like in Grand Rapids Public Schools, we're part of a public school district, but the district has realized that students need a variety of partners and access points. So centers of innovation are, you know, my school is a center of innovation. Another school, Innovation Central, looks at some career pathways. University Prep Academy has a business focus. And so some schools are moving in that direction, but it's hard to turn a big ship.
And Chris, did your school start as a result of the XQ Super School grant?
I'm glad you asked that. No, as a matter of fact, it didn't. We, a design team from Kendall College of Art and Design, Grand Valley State University, which you mentioned earlier, and the Grand Rapids Public Museum, along with the school district, had been working for several years to develop the idea for the school. And so ours is really a public-public partnership, because those are all other public institutions in downtown Grand Rapids. And the school was launched. It opened inside the public museum, the middle school, with just a sixth grade class. I was fortunate enough to be the principal at that time when it was founded. And in the first month that our school existed, the application materials landed on my desk for the XQ award, which was a year-long process that we went through during the first year of our school. But I think what happened with XQ is they just recognized that our vision was very similar to their vision to reimagine education in many of the same ways that we're all talking today. Yep.
Wonderful. And we were actually competing with you, Chris, because we had put forth, you know, the Learner Active Technology Fused Classroom is all about engagement, empowerment, efficacy, kids solving real world problems. And we wanted to get out of the school building. So we put together a plan for what I called Lava High, which was Learner Active Virtual Academy. And the idea would be that you could take school online, but you could also go to these, I forget what we called them, but they were like clusters where you could, it could be in a local office. It could be, you know, in a corporate office where there'd be a room. And if you wanted on that day, you could go and work out of that corporate office, or you could,
I love that,
work, or you could work whatever. And so we've done this whole Lava High thing. And we got through the first round, but, you know, we lost out to you, Chris, in the end. But I think, too, it's hard. You know, we are a for-profit consulting company, so I don't know that the money was going to be funneled toward us to design a school like that as much as going to the public schools and charter schools and folks, nonprofits, et cetera. But so congratulations. I know the process. I thought it was a really cool process.
There were a lot of great ideas out there.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind me roping back to something that John mentioned earlier on, you know, John, you mentioned the term silos before, and how in many high schools across our country, you know, content areas, courses, even the way that the school is set up in regards to wings are structured through silos in different content areas. Yep. And as we talk about sort of deconstructing the industrial model of education as it sits today, what are some practical steps for school leaders to take in deconstructing silos in their existing high schools?
Well, within the existing model, the first thing that an administrator needs to do is invest in the people that he or she employs. You have to invest in collaboration time for the teachers, and you really have to model and promote collaboration time. Just asking a teacher to come outside of their classroom doesn't solve the problem. You have to get that teacher to then collaborate with his or her peer down the way in a different subject. So it's one of the things that we've done at ACE is actively invest time in collaboration time. Our teachers, outside of our COVID schedule, our teachers have an extra hour each day to collaborate across the grade levels and across the subjects. And then from that, the next thing that I would do within this thematic learning approach is you ask students to design and build projects and problems across the subjects, right? So you're not saying get rid of the English class. You're not saying get rid of the math class. You're asking the math and English teachers to teach their subject, teach their standards around the same universal question. But you're approaching it through the lens of a mathematician. You're approaching it through the lens of an English student.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
Love it. We can continue on that thread if you have more to say. But first, we need to take a short break. Thank International Broadcast Media TV and what's in your mug? So my mug today says high school teacher, only because multitasking ninja is not an actual job title. Shout out to all of the high school teachers everywhere for the tough job you have in being a multitasking ninja. Love that. Omega, what is in your mug?
Oh, what's in my mug? I don't know if you all can see that. This is my mug from Innovative Strategies Consulting. Oh, you maybe can see that. I think you can. Mm-hmm. My consulting business is my mug. I have some tea inside of there. Some dandelion tea. It actually tastes like cocoa. I love it. I absolutely love it. Get the caramel brand. Caramel flavor.
Dandelion tea.
Dandelion tea, and it is so good. And you put a little bit of whipped cream in there and put a little creamer in there, caramel creamer. You'd think you got it from Starbucks. But yeah, this is my consulting business.
You have anything else in there, Omega?
No, ma'am. I don't have it. You probably think so, right? I don't know if you want me to tell anything about my consulting business or just what's in my mug, but that's it. Nothing illegal or nothing alcoholic.
Chris, what's in your mug?
I actually have two mugs right now. This is the one I carry around all day, travel mug that normally has some coffee from Ferris Coffee, a local fine roaster around here.
Shout right out now, to though, Ferris Coffee Roasters, and where are they located? In Grand Rapids?
In Grand Rapids, yep. Right. Just down the road. And but that, you know, that mug never lasts me past noon, and I'm still here at school. So I don't think you can. It's all worn off now. But this is a Grand Valley State mug that was given to me by my colleagues when I went across the road from being a faculty member over there to opening the museum school. And we still work together a lot. But normally this would have some ginger tea in it by now, but I'm still at school, so it still has coffee.
Ah, so it's coffee during the day and tea at night. I see. John, what's in your mug?
So it's the afternoon, so I have a spot of Earl Grey in my Te Amo.
I love that.
Valentine's Day gift from my significant other.
So, that is great. That is great. That's right, because you're in California, so we're only at, what is it, only quarter to three out there? Quarter to
two. The sun is still shining in SoCal.
It's a wonderful thing. Yeah. And Dave, what is in your mug?
Well, Nance, you kind of you broke the ice a little bit earlier, but my mug says, "Dear Daddy, this Valentine's Day I'll be snuggled up in Mommy's belly, but next Valentine's Day I'll be snuggled up with you."
That is so cute.
Wait, you have to read the final line.
Oh yeah, Mommy says it's the best.
That's important.
Aww.
Nice going, Carly. Yeah. All right, so I always love the "What's in Your Mug" segment. Now let's get back to reinventing high school. Dave, toss out a question.
Yeah. So, Dr. Hanks, I know that at your school, you've been doing a lot of work around place-based learning, and that's one of our five P's at IDE Corp. So if you could just kind of walk us through what that looks like or what that feels like for a student in your school.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. John was getting me really excited before the coffee break because of some of the ideas he was talking about. Place-based education alongside design thinking are two of the key animating ideas for our school. For place-based education, we really think about a couple of things. One being learning through and with one's environment. So, you know, place-based education in general sort of emerged out of environmental education movements and still has a lot of roots there, and we take those up. But our environment is the city. So, you know, we kind of have an urban place-based education. And the other key, I think, in place-based education is sort of the aim toward empowerment and toward community engagement that I mentioned earlier. But our students, for instance, their initial project cycle in ninth grade, we call the neighborhood project. We want them to get to know their neighborhood, get to know their community. It's really tricky this year because the neighborhood project generally involves them basically scouring five or more blocks around the area of our school, getting to know the businesses, the organizations that are our neighbors. And then in combination with language arts, social studies, your traditional subject area academic content, they're learning about their community and they're learning about those subject areas through the lens of their community. And at the culmination of that project cycle, which happens in November, we have a showcase and students have identified a problem or issue in the community. They've identified a community partner to work with to tackle that problem. And at minimum, they've come up with a presentation and proposal to respond to that problem. And in some cases, they go beyond that and actually implement their ideas and plans. Our teachers pulled it off this year virtually, with some really interesting Google Map features and all of that. But that's a taste of what we do. And there are project cycles like that, especially throughout 9th and 10th. And there's a little more of a release in 11th and 12th. Students are more independent in choosing not just the focus within the project, but even the project context.
And that's humongous. Sorry.
Do you all think that we can start to shift the paradigms? Because that's what, like I always say in our company, we are paradigm shifters. We're trying to get people to think differently about school. So how do we shift the paradigm of teachers as I'm given my curriculum and now I have to deliver it and maybe I try to deliver it in interesting ways, et cetera, to imagine if kids could come into school and they would define, and they might need some help in this, but they would define the problems they want to solve. And then it's incumbent on the teachers to figure out how they can fit that curriculum in. I mean, I believe that if you gave me any problem, I could figure out how to weave some aspect of a curriculum into it. And so it's more like the teacher as a consultant, if you will, who knows that students have to learn certain skills, but they could learn them through that problem. But now the problem is the student's interest. So it sounds like you're all involved in some level of this happening. So how do we get more of that happening?
Dr. Shula, I think you just said it. You asked the teachers to design a set of learning experiences for kids around an agreed upon question or an agreed upon set of questions and themes that the teachers should take a part in constructing. No one gets into education because they just want to move through. When I started, the old California content standards for history, that is just a timeline of stuff. I didn't get into teaching history because that's what I wanted to do. So trust your teachers, empower them, give them permission to do that. And then you create space and you get out of the way.
And I love what you said, and it is so true. No teacher signed on to be a teacher because they want to cover the standards. And yet that's what ends up happening to them. It's like, you need to cover the standards.
Yeah. I think both of you, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
You answered the question. I think you just have to jump in there and just do it. I mean, you know, you can't be afraid to do it. You just have to, like my latest book says, you have to lead by example. Find your trusted agents in that building and say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to experiment with this thing. We're going to bring these kids together. We're going to help them learn differently. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is the way it's going to happen. You put them through a series of professional development, of course, so that it can be done with fidelity and it can be effective. But you just do it. You just do it knowing that the outcome is going to be nothing but amazing. I mean, that's where we are. That's where we are now in education. You're just testing different things to see what's going to work and what's going to work best for kids. And then you give them the opportunity again to lead as well and to give their voice and to share.
Yeah, I agree. And also John said it earlier, time and space. You know, you can find these connections almost everywhere, but it takes a lot of time. With the XQ grant, we had the fortune to hire a few teachers basically a year before we needed them to teach full time so that they could develop curriculum and develop learning experiences. And that was a huge game changer in us building the sequence of projects and learning experiences that we have. But, you know, that, and they still have about an extra, you know, hour, 45 minutes to an hour a day. Like John mentioned, I also think you need to transform space, physical space, create spaces where classes can come together, where learning can be in small groups, individual or large groups, and flexible, and schedule and creating space in the daily schedule. You know, you might have an attendance schedule that you report and check in, but you know, don't keep students on 50-minute classes all day long every day. So you know, all of those things, and the professional development piece is huge, and it's got to be ongoing for teachers to because we all grew up in this system for the most part, you know, and everybody's an expert at school because we all spent 12 years there, but we're an expert in the old way. And anytime you're not thinking intentionally about how to do it differently, you're going to fall back to those old ways.
And I think, Nancy, there were two comments that were just phenomenal. A huge part of the recipe is trusting your teachers and getting out of the way. And a lot of times we have to be honest with ourselves in administration. I was not guilty of this. And I think this is one reason why being the principal of Hermitage High School when I was principal there for 5 years, this is why I love, that was my best job that I ever had in my entire life, because I trusted the teachers. I trusted the administration. And same thing when I was director of high schools for Henrico. You have to trust these people with their skill set and let them go for it. If you make a mistake with it, it's okay. Let's just figure out how we're going to revamp it and figure it out, you know, but you have to trust and get out of the way. You can't micromanage the team.
Yeah.
One of the neatest things that I've seen over the last year is how my staff has taken the current situation and made the best out of it, but not only extended it forward into something that I have a feeling is going to stick around. An example of that are my two English teachers who have combined their 11th and 12th grade classes into one, because they can do that very easily on Zoom. But so now I've got my 11th and 12th graders in really one big class with two teachers. My math teachers have done the same thing. It's like an exciting innovation that I didn't come up with. They just, this is what we need to be successful during this time. And you know, I can't take that away from them when we do come back.
Right. Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah, it's Max Dupree wrote a book years ago on leadership, the jazz of leadership. I don't even remember what it is. But anyway, part of it was, the one chapter was trust your giants or empower your giants. And it was all about when you have teachers who come up with innovative ideas, let them run with it, fund it, try it, go with it, because that's when you're going to get the most done. And we find that as we design learner active classrooms and we have, you know, our model is to provide workshops, but then also provide coaching. So it's workshops and coaching, workshops and coaching. And they work with us for at least 4 years and beyond, because usually after 4 years, they're asking, can we still meet in the summer? Because it's like, there's a lot to do. And you start to see the teachers soon coming up with the solutions for the school and truly becoming efficacious. Because I believe that everything goes from engagement to empowerment to efficacious, and, and isn't the goal of school to produce efficacious citizens?
That's what Ben Franklin wanted. That and to save our democracy, right?
I knew I stole it from somebody. I want to finish up with a couple of comments and your thoughts on the standardized tests, because I saw that several comments came by on the standardized tests. And a story that I know I've told before, because it was a pivotal point in my own teaching. When I was second year teacher, I was teaching math to middle school kids who were failing the state tests. And so they were in my class. And I realized that this constant fight with them over, like, who doesn't have a pencil? Who didn't bring their book? It was ridiculous. And I said to myself, if I'm struggling with these students that much, it's not their fault. It's my fault. I've got to figure out what I have to do differently. So I brought them all together one day and I said, let's talk about it. They told me how boring my class was. And I said, all right, well, how about if we work on problems and solve real world problems? And they were like, oh, that could be fun. So I started just giving them real world problems to solve. And then they came up with some and we worked that way. At the end of the year, when the standardized tests came, my principal brought me into his office and he said, you know, your kids did really well in the state test. And I'm like, awesome. And he said, all but one passed. And I was like, wow, good for them. He said, did you cheat? You can tell me.
Wow.
I didn't cheat. No, they got that. He goes, how the heck did they get those scores? And I'm like, I don't know, you know, and I really didn't. And then he said to me, well, your students outperformed the regular ed classes in percentages. How do you teach percentages? And I said to him, I didn't get to that chapter. So literally, this is what I always talk about. I never got to the chapter, but the kids aced the test. And I believe it's because what I was building was interest, engagement, empowerment, efficacy, academic resilience. Yeah. Those tests are not that hard. And in many cases now, the tests have changed. So it's not so much about, do you know this particular formula? But it's, do you know how to apply it to a situation? Here's the formula. Do you know how to apply it to a situation? So it's less about memorization and it's more about just feeling good about yourself when you hit those tests. So I think if you take a thematic approach to instruction, if you engage kids, I believe that they'll pass the state tests. We have to stop teaching as though them having all those answers is the be all end all. It's like, you don't have all those answers because you suffered through a lot of lessons. You have those answers because you are an academically resilient person, you know. Go ahead, take it away.
I'd like to submit the possibility that they did well on that test because you taught them how to solve problems, and that was the next big problem that they were facing.
Right, and I think they looked at it like I said to them, we're gonna put aside our problems today because we're taking the state test for the next 2 days, and you know, it's your turn to shine. And that's what I said. I think they approached it like any other problem. So good catch, Chris.
I'll be 100% honest with you. During this pandemic, and I kind of felt like this before the pandemic, but during the pandemic, I've been completely blown away that we're still talking about standardized testing. I mean, when you're dealing with or teaching students who are probably homeless or dealing with the death of a loved one or a family member, friend, you're dealing with people who are hungry, people who's parents have lost jobs. Oh, but we need you to focus on that test. Or you're dealing with adults, teachers who are actually dealing with all of those things. We don't even think about the teachers sometimes. We just think that students are dealing with homelessness. Teachers are dealing with that as well. But we want you to teach that test.
Right.
I think a lot of times that is exactly why students don't do well.
Right.
That's why, because teachers are teaching to the test. Mm-hmm. I know when I was in Henrico County, the director of CTE and I, we partnered with one of the technical schools. And we partnered, I think it was the nursing program, maybe with the math teacher. They collaborated. 100% of those students passed the test. They didn't even focus on the test, the end of the course test. They passed the end of the course test. My point is they focused on real world situations. They focused on the future and they gave them things that interested them, not on making sure let's do this problem, let's do that problem, let's do this in this little box, these few standards. I think a lot of times we have to really assess ourselves. Now, I do believe there should be some type of an assessment, but to say that we're still focusing on standardized testing, doing the same thing that we were doing 2 years ago when we were not in a pandemic, what in the world is wrong with us? What are we thinking about? Or what are educators thinking about when you're saying we're still talking about a standardized test? I think it's not absurd, but I'm not going to say that it's not absurd. I think it's something that you have to rethink because you want us to do the same thing that we were doing prior to a pandemic. And it doesn't work. A standardized test doesn't work for everyone. I'm a poor standardized test taker. Give me an essay and I'm going to rock it out the box. I'm going to write. If you tell me to write one page, I'm going to write six. But everyone can't bubble because I analyze it too much. But the other part of that is it interesting to that person? Assess them on something that's going to interest them. That's also equivalent to a standardized test or that's going to be beneficial for them once they graduate.
Well, a standardized test is easily quantifiable, right? So we need to move in education. I would argue we need to move into something that's a little more quality-based, right? You can qualify it.
Right.
What if we had the kids develop portfolios over the course of their educational journey? Mm-hmm. You know, circling back to where we started, we're talking about individualizing education. Have the students develop a portfolio that shows growth over time, and then when they graduate or they end their formal education, they have something that they can then take with them and say, this is what I learned. And then the school generates some sort of report based off of what it is the kids did.
Yeah, 100%.
The senior presentations at ACE are built around your past, present, and future self.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's how you graduate. You didn't pass a bunch of classes. Yeah, that's easy. D's get degrees. It's what did you learn?
Yeah, right. I love that. I love the portfolio. I love that. Love it.
Well, I am out of time. And as always, we could go on for a couple more hours. So I want to thank you, John, Omega, Chris, for being here. You know, I'll be tapping you to come back and continue this discussion because you've got some great ideas and I love the things that are going on in the schools that you're working in, or in your case, Omega working with. So thank you so much for being here. I'm blessed to have you guys on the show. And Dave, as always, thanks for being here to be the co-host. And you guys are gonna head backstage, but I'll be back there soon. And I would like to thank our directors, Gwen Fahn from International Broadcast Media TV, and Boyd Adelson, Lauren Franceskin, and Dr. Carrie Gentner, who are all part of IDE. So for this show to go on, there's a lot of people backstage who are making it all happen. I'd like to thank my live audience because it's always fun to get the questions and the comments from you guys as we go about this show. This week for our outro, we have some of the older students in middle and high school and even graduated offer their suggestions for what they think were different about school. And it's interesting because when you listen to them, they have the same kinds of themes going on. And it's all of what my wonderful guests were talking about here today. We need to think differently about high school. And so I hope you've gotten some ideas. And next week, we're going to be talking about empowering readers. So I hope to see you next week. Thanks and have a wonderful week.
Classes that are more supported around technology, math classes being more about stuff that we're going to use in real life, such as like taxes and stuff.
Looking back on my time in high school, I think that I always wonder how better off students would have been if they were provided with like a class on financial literacy. A lot of students graduate high school without knowing how to file for taxes, how to apply for healthcare, how to pay bills. These are things that are like essentials in like the real world. And I think that looking at college students now and seeing how they're dealing with like heart-wrenching stress when dealing with financials, I think something that high schools can do better is really making financial literacy a priority to teach.
What if in high school there were more lounges in an off period? Not like study hall or not like lunch, but a period where kids could gather and create schedules to fit around their friends, where they could meet and get together and just kind of decompress from school, take an off period, sit, do nothing, talk, and socialize.
One thing that I would change about high school would be to add recess or just some extra time outside, because you are exercising in gym, but you're also learning. So I think kids need an extra break so they can clear their minds before the second half of the day.
I would change about high school is that kids should be able to get out of school to volunteer without missing school hours. Because a lot of kids have to wait until school is over or the summer, when volunteering is equally as educational as school and it teaches you life skills.
Thanks for watching Learning Unwrapped. Tune in next week to talk about empowering readers. Reading, pass it on.
With MailChimp, you get more than a URL. You get an all-in-one marketing platform to help drive sales. With things like data-driven recommendations and powerful automation tools. Get started today at MailChimp.com/smartmarketing. MailChimp, built for growing businesses.
We did it again. Verizon was just named America's most reliable network by Root Metrics for the 16th time in a row. Proving once again that nobody builds networks like Verizon builds networks. That's why we're building 5G right. That's why there's only one best network. Verizon. Best and most reliable based on Root Metrics reports from second half 2013 to first half 2021 of three operators on all network types combined, not specific to 5G networks.